Hi, and welcome to another episode of And Your Brain Turns to Mush, a TV podcast. Today we're going to be talking about Dan Harmon drama, Charlie Sheen drama, Under the Dome, and our first review slash talking about the cancellation of Zack Stone is going to be famous. But first, we just wanted to take a minute to recognize James Gandolfini, who passed away last week. You know, there's a lot of shows that you can point to and say, like, this had an incremental effect on the TV industry, or this changed the way we did this a little bit. But The Sopranos is one of those shows that you look at and you go, this changed everything. Ever since The Sopranos premiered, the TV landscape has been hugely different. And James Gandolfini's performance as Tony Soprano is a huge part of that. He was a great actor, and it's really too bad that we won't be seeing any more iconic roles from him. And best wishes go out to his family. It's really too bad. He was too young. But yeah, glad we have the performance of Tony Soprano. Is a really, really great character and great actor. So yeah, from that serious topic, on to silliness. Dan Harmon.
Yes, a very silly man indeed. Always getting into trouble. He's got to just take some duct tape and slap it right there on his mouth, and just he'd be great. I think everybody would really like him.
I totally agree. Oh, by the way, I'm Graham.
Oh, and I'm Josh.
Yep, so figured we'd throw that out there.
just saying, there you go.
Yeah.
That's our identity.
So Dan Harmon, a couple weeks ago, was like, you know, I'm not going to be a jerk about season four. I'm not going to say that didn't happen, and it's going to be in continuity for the show. I have friends who worked on that season, and everyone went, oh, that's kind of a boring reaction, but it makes sense and probably the right thing to do. But then he was on a podcast, and I listened to the podcast. He sounded... Now, this is just my speculation, my informed guess, but I'm going to guess that he had had a few things to drink before saying any of this. I mean, it's a safe bet with Dan Harmon.
Yeah, it seems to be the trend with him. Sober Dan Harmon is professional, and then drunk Dan Harmon gets him into trouble.
Yeah, so he went on to say that season four of Community was like watching your family getting raped on a beach, and
bad.
Yeah, I think that would count as bad.
Okay.
Don't think there are many people that are you know, would be fans of that. He also said that it made him very you know, self-aware, and thought that, you know, do I really sound like this? Because they were so clearly trying to mimic his voice. And so, yeah, and then he imitated him, the show, doing himself, which some people thought he was making fun of mentally disabled people. So pretty much he apologized to...
He not only ripped on the show, but he... You know, bashed mentally disabled people, like,
right,
all within the span of a couple minutes.
And then, of course, you know, there's a very good argument to be made. A lot of people were not happy about his comparison of a television show to rape. So, in the end, he ended up apologizing to the cast and crew, to anyone who was offended by the rape comment or the comparison between mentally disabled people. So yeah, he just went around, had to apologize to everybody, and I guess Sony knew what they were signing up for. They haven't fired him. I have heard, though, what's funny is you know, that you get like TV journalists, they get sent big press announcements, like you know, this producer is joining this show. And then there's long note from both the company that hired them and them being like, you know, so happy to be working on this show, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, the press release for Dan Harmon coming back to Community was literally one sentence of, Dan Harmon has been hired back as executive producer / showrunner of Community. The end. So I think that I think, you know, Sony hates this guy. Oh, and that wasn't the only thing. I forgot to mention another thing he said. In his apology, he went after Sony, the people who just hired him back, saying that writers fighting writers is their wet dream, and comparing them to Big Brother. And, you know, basically, oh, and saying that everyone who worked there was evil. So, yeah, it's, you know.
Can we just tie Dan Harmon down to a chair in a room somewhere where he has just enough mobility in his hand to write? And we'd be good. We'd have no problems. He'd write awesome shows for us.
But see, I've, like, a lot of the time, and I find Dan Harmon really funny, even outside of Community. His podcast is quite often funny. He's a funny guy. He just doesn't know when to say when. He doesn't know when something is over the line and when it's not, it seems to me.
Does he? I'm trying to think, because, I mean, he's got to be able to register it in his mind. He's not a dumb guy by any stretch, you know? He's an intelligent guy. You'd think he almost is doing it for the attention of it or something. I don't understand. I don't know.
That wouldn't surprise me. But also, I think, like, Sony hired him back. I think he was kind of their only option. I don't think he's really afraid. And also, I think he knows this will be the last season of the show. But that's what everyone has said about almost every season. So, you know, all bets are really off by this.
The whole situation is so weird.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's like Dan Harmon is the husband, or no, Dan Harmon's like the bitchy wife. Sony is the husband. They had to get separated, right? So they're separated, and we got season 4 of Community. But the kids just couldn't stand mom and dad being apart. And so for the sake of the kids, they're getting together again. But that's not stopping, you know, bitchy Dan Harmon doing his thing still. So it's very odd. Has something like this ever, like, happened elsewhere? It's
really,
it's a very unique situation.
Dan Harmon couldn't have been the douchey husband. We had to go for the poor wives out there.
Yes, I have just personally attacked every wife out there. Wives everywhere should be offended by what I just said.
But yeah, so I don't know. They're back together now, and it's not, you know, I guess, I think they're just going to get this one out, make a couple more bucks off syndication, and then Sony and Dan Harmon will never have to speak again. Like, that's... I don't see Sony hiring him again for a project in the future. You know, it's not smart of Dan Harmon. I mean, I understand. Maybe it would be a little bit better from, like, my perspective if what he was saying wasn't hyperbolic, because I definitely believe that Sony, you know, has hampered his creativity, what he can do on the show. I'm sure that the vision, I mean, we kind of saw Sony's vision of the show in season 4, and it was not that great, you know?
Terrible.
Yeah, so he's right. Sony is, in a way, trying to be the purveyor of mediocrity here. And he's trying to make something great. But at the same time, not every single person who works at Sony is evil. That's a ridiculous statement, and everyone knows that. Sony is a huge corporation with probably tons of nice people working there and tons of annoying people. You know, it's a ridiculous statement.
So his attack was on everyone from the accountant to the little janitor at Sony. They all are just satanic.
Some guy manufacturing Sony TVs is like, what the fuck did I do?
What the hell, Dan Harmon?
Yeah.
I expect an apology, sir. An apology.
But, yeah, so it's just a ridiculous situation, and Dan Harmon really just needs to shut up and write his show now.
Yes, agreed.
So, going from someone who is slightly annoying, but whose creative output is worth putting up with his annoying for, is someone who is the total opposite of that. Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen, We're having a bit of a throwback week to 2011.
Yeah, this was so 2011. I'm so over the whole Charlie Sheen being crazy Tiger Blood thing, you know?
Yep, yep. But it's back, and back just in time for when Anger Management, his show's ratings were sinking. Coincidence? I don't know. But, so Selma Blair, who the poor woman who has to play his, romantic interest, I believe, on the show, which, man, talk about a job that would be horrible. Apparently, she went to the producers of Anger Management saying, like, you know, obviously, I don't know exactly what she said. Nobody did. But, you know, saying that he's been late. He's not being professional. He's not showing up on time. You know, Selma Blair is, you know, is a woman who has a family and stuff. I'm sure that was a huge pain in the ass. And he found out about this and blasted her, saying that, you know, he works way more hours than she does, that he works, that he has every 40 pages per episode to her 2 pages, which is impossible because no half-hour sitcom has 40 pages for a script, but, you know, whatever. So, yeah, and then he demanded that she be fired. Everyone kind of thought he was just, you know, being goofy old Charlie Sheen.
Oh, that crazy, crazy man.
Right. But then she was fired. And then Charlie Sheen, apparently consulting no one from the network, said that he wants to do a 10-episode arc replacing... Jeez, this is getting so convoluted. This is a very convoluted storyline here. replacing Selma Blair with Mila Kunis, offering to pay her $1 million an episode.
He can do that? Of course he can do it, man. He's Charlie Sheen, man. The world just stops for Sheen.
Right, and see, what's also funny is if you remember 2 and a Half Men... Ashton Kutcher replaced Charlie Sheen on that show. Ashton Kutcher is dating Mila Kunis. We don't want to turn into the celebrity gossip show here, but that's a little weird. That's a little weird. It's like your replacement's girlfriend you want for your show. It seems very random. But it turned out that FX was like, hey, guess what, Charlie Sheen? We're not paying anybody $10 million to be in 10 episodes of your crappy, low-rated show. So now they're just looking for a new woman to cast who Charlie Sheen said will be the Rachel to – no, not Rebecca to Selma Blair and Charlie Sheen, Sam and Diane, using a – Cheers comparison there, because Charlie Sheen has not seen any television made since 1990. So, yeah. For anybody who doesn't get that comparison, Sam and Diane were the first couple on Cheers. The woman who played Diane left, and then they had a new woman, Rebecca. And that's kind of where the show fell off a little bit for me. But that's neither here nor there. So what do you think about Charlie Sheen being crazy and wacky?
Really just don't care, like, in the slightest.
Yeah, I feel bad for Selma Blair because she just seems like a professional who wanted her workplace to be professional and not horrible. But when you're working with Charlie Sheen and he is the star of the show, I guess you gotta put up with the Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, I think she should have had a little bit more foresight, but I don't want to bash her at all because obviously she wasn't the one in the wrong here at all. But, you know, it doesn't matter. You can be right and, you know, get
but
the brunt.
But it's not like he is the boss. He's not the showrunner, but he just flexed his muscles here. They need him on board, so... it's not like she was going behind her back of her boss or anything. It was like her coworker who was causing problems. So, yeah. makes sense to me. It's ridiculous. Charlie Sheen is a douchebag, but everybody knows that already, so, you know.
Nothing's
no
new.
No need to rehash. Yeah. So, you know, let's get into some actual TV talk instead of the behind-the-scenes drama here. This week was the premiere of Under the Dome on CBS. It's a summer series based on Stephen King's novel and adapted, but not being run, just adapted like J.J. Abrams style, where he wrote the pilot and directed, or he didn't direct it, but he wrote it and kind of helped develop it, by Brian K. Vaughan, the comic mastermind, well, comic book mastermind behind Why the Last Man and Saga, both great books, but I couldn't really see the voice of him in this show. I think he was trying to stick closer to Stephen King's voice. But yeah, what did you think of Under the Dome, Josh?
I definitely liked the premise. It had an interesting, you know, story with the whole dome coming over and all that. Outside of that, I don't know. Characters were pretty average. I don't know. Nothing really stood out to me in any of the performances. But I'll definitely stick around for episode two. I'll tell you that. I'm interested enough in the whole mystery of what this dome is. You know, it's kind of a Lost scenario. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And this is another one of those shows that is like Lost, trying to grab their audience with mysteries like Flash Forward in the event. But I think it's better executed than either of those so far.
Oh, yes, and I love shows like that. Like, I really get into the whole mystery because I suck at ever solving them, so it's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think I liked this episode a little more than you. I thought, let's see, we had Hank from Breaking Bad, who I'm sorry, I'm totally spacing on the actor's name right now. Putting in a really good performance as Big Jim or Big Joe. He's kind of, you know, at first he came off as a really nice small town guy, and then you slowly start to realize that, you know, he means business about this ruling. This being a city councilman's really gone to this guy's head.
Yeah, so I'm like watching it. I'm like, oh, it's Hank. It's nice old Hank with, you know, eating at the diner and paying the lady a lot of money and all nice. And then by the end of the episode, I'm like, that's the anti-Hank. That's the opposite of Hank.
Yeah, I thought that was a good performance. I'm also interested in, you know, the main mystery behind, you know, Barbie. The main guy, what he was up to, you know, his background in the military.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that guy.
I thought that was an interesting plot line. I thought he was a pretty good actor. You know what this pilot kind of reminded me of, though, was Jericho.
Jericho, exactly, dude. You had the military guy that kind of like... It, exactly like Jericho. That's probably the closest comparison you can draw to any show at this point would be Jericho.
Yeah, but you know, it is Stephen King, so there's a little bit more of a darker twist than Jericho had. And honestly, I think the performances here are better than the performances in Jericho. I enjoyed Jericho when it was on. It was definitely a fun watch, like when Lost was in its off season, I would watch Jericho. Jericho was a fun show, but you know, it wasn't a great show, and neither is this yet. But both shows are definitely fun summer watches when not much else is on. At least that's what this is right now. It could elevate itself past that, but right now it's kind of at that level, and that's good enough for me to. You know, it's only 13 episodes. I'll probably watch all of them. It's a fun concept, some fun actors. So yeah, I enjoyed Under the Dome. I thought there were some things that didn't work about it. I liked the twist that creepy Andy Samberg guy, who was the abusive boyfriend.
Yes, this just further proves that anyone that says I love you has got to be crazy.
I I don't think that holds true throughout history, but yeah, he was insane. And wow, they really played that up. Like, there was not a moment of this pilot where you thought, oh, you know, that junior, he could be an okay guy. No, he was like freaking crazy
the whole time. You're like, one, this guy is a freaking nutcase. Like, this guy's really weird. And it's fun to see those type of train wrecks, you know, because you're so like kind of like appalled by it.
Well, here's the thing. I liked the twist that he was Hank's son. That was fun. I thought that also, yeah, I also thought that bred the possibility of a lot of future interesting plot lines with him keeping his girlfriend in, you know, in their bunker, hostage. That was fun, but, the problem with having a character that from minute one is so insane is that, okay, you met his girlfriend. She seemed like a smart, reasonable, normal person. Why would she ever date this guy in the first place?
For the sex. We did see. That was like one of the opening scenes.
Yeah, but I don't think, you know... Okay, I don't buy that she's dying to bang Andy Samberg here. You know, it... I don't get... It seemed like they'd been in a long relationship. I don't understand why, you know... Has he just started now really going off the deep end? He mentioned that he, you know, was going to college. Did he come back from college? Did college change him somehow? Has he always been this insane? And if so, if he was always this noticeably insane, why did she ever date him in the first place? I don't really buy that.
Now that you really make me look at it, I definitely see where you think that doesn't stand up. It was weird for me. Another weird thing. I don't know if you saw the plane that was, you know, coming in, hit the dome, all that.
Yes.
For some reason, I thought it was coming from the other direction. Did it lead you to believe that? Or did,
yeah.
Because when the plane wrecked, I was like, wait a second. Why is it falling on these guys? It's flying into the dome, not from inside the dome to outside the dome.
Yeah, no, it took me a second, but I realized that, yeah, it was flying inside the dome. I think it was from a farm that was inside the dome that took off. You know, it was just one of those crop dusting planes.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah.
Because I don't know, I think they could have shown that better with their camera angles or something, because it definitely threw me off at first, obviously, until the parts were falling on them.
Actually, and maybe I'm just dumb, but I had a hard time during the first, like, about 10 minutes of the dome being down of figuring out, wait, so who's inside the dome? Who's outside of the dome?
Sure. No, I'm right there with you. Did you also think that the cops were outside the dome?
Yeah, I did. I thought the cops were outside of the dome, and, yeah, I thought since the firefighters responded so quickly to the plane crash that they were coming from the town, so when I saw the firefighters coming towards them and Barbie was out there yelling for them to stop, I thought, oh, so they're outside of the dome. They're just outside of the dome and the firefighters are inside of the dome. It was all very confusing. Maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention. I don't know. I just felt like, you know, there could have been a couple more context hints in that area. Not a huge problem, but one that was momentarily confusing.
Speaking of context hints, did you think that the... okay, so we had opened up the episode and Barbie was burying that guy, right?
Yeah, who turned out to be the reporter's husband.
Yeah, the reporter's husband. You see him in the picture, instantly I recognized, and I'm sure you recognized who it was, but of course they had the flashback. Do you think it merited a flashback to him burying the dude? Because for me, it kind of broke the pace for me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's network TV, it's CBS. I understand why they did that.
Wouldn't do that. They would expect us to be smart enough to keep up with something like that.
Yeah, but honestly, I'm not gonna like single out Under the Dome for this, because so many shows all the time. I was just actually before recording this watching one of my favorite Buffy episodes, The Gift, and they do that in that episode, which was apparently inserted by the WB against the Buffy writers. Will, and that it always stands out in that episode of like, we're flashing back to something she literally said this episode. That's unnecessary. And, you know, that's just a TV thing that people have been doing a long time. It's nice when HBO shows trust the audience enough to let go of that. But
yeah, that's not something I blame shows for. That's probably the average intellect of the viewers that I'm blaming, because I'm sure there are people out there that needed that. I don't know.
Yeah,
won't do it unless people actually needed it, right? I don't know.
I'm sure some CBS executive somewhere went, somebody who's not really paying attention is going to miss this. Let's just stick this in there real quick just to make it perfectly clear. But yeah, it was a goofy, it was unnecessary, but at the same time, it's just kind of, especially network TV, it's just kind of a trope that I've come to accept. But yeah, oh, and another performance that I really wanted to highlight, that I was kind of upset that he was only going to be, it looked like, at the end of the episode, that he, you know, he looked pretty dead.
I think he was dead, yes. I recognize him from Lost, where he was a scrawny guy then.
He was Mr. Friendly.
Yes. And he had a very good, I would say him and Hank had the best performances out of anyone by far.
Oh, and, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for that reason, I was also sad to see him go there, which I don't know, did his heart explode?
I thought that was very interesting. I think that whoever did this, and my bet is still on the government, because you know, it seems tied up into whatever Hank was doing with the local government. But my bet is it's still the government, and I think that they, you know, whoever installed his pacemaker, or somebody had control of that pacemaker and didn't want him to give away anything.
Yes, yes.
That was fun. I liked that twist. But yeah, it was funny. I actually just watched a 20-year younger version of him in the pilot of The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. literally just before this. And that guy, he keeps changing body shapes, because he was big in that, he was skinny and Lost, but he's always a great actor.
He can just do it at will. That's how good he is at acting. He's just like, "What? Oh, you need a fat guy for this. No, no problem. Let me just go in my changing room. I'll be okay.
Give me 3 days.
Give me 3 days. See him just living at a McDonald's.
But yeah, he was really good in this, and I kind of hope that he sticks around, but it would not surprise me because he looked pretty damn dead.
Pretty damn dead, yes.
But yeah, Under the Dome was a good show. I enjoyed it just fine. I haven't read the book. I've read a lot of Stephen King books. Under the Dome's not one of them, though. I've read most of his older horror stuff, and then when I was going to read one of his newer books, I decided to go with the JFK assassination one, since that one was better reviewed, and it was a great book. I have Under the Dome sitting at my house. I might pick it up and read it now. I don't know. I'll probably stick with this show, although it kind of disappointed me, Brian K. Vaughan's script, because Brian K. Vaughan is such a good writer, known for his insanely fun dialogue.
See, yeah, and that's the thing I would point out. There's no specific strong dialogue point where I was like, that was a great conversation or something like that. It was mostly about the mystery for me, and that's why I'll be coming back, not because of any cool dialogue moments.
Yeah, and there was none of that. Like you said, there was none of that in this pilot. I think Brian K. Vaughan was trying to mimic more of Stephen King's, Stephen King's strength isn't in his dialogue, it's in his storytelling, his twists, he makes good characters, but he has very down-to-earth normal dialogue, and I think that's what Brian K. Vaughan was going for with his script. I kind of would have liked to see him bust out a little bit of his Brian K. Vaughan-ness, but, you know, it was a good pilot. What do you think you're going to give it for a grade, and are you going to watch it again?
I will give it a C-, and yes, I will watch it again.
Ooh, a C-, and you're going to watch it again.
And I'm going to watch it again,
that's pretty brutal to grade.
It's just that when I'm looking at it broad, because I can say, oh man, I want to come back for the mystery. But at the end of the day, there was nothing. If the mystery wasn't there, I wouldn't be coming back to this show.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a B minus. I think that it was a perfectly solid pilot, especially for a genre show. It had a lot of really, really fun elements to it. Had some stuff I enjoyed. Had some performances I enjoyed. So, yeah, I'll stick around. It's not must-see TV, but it's a fun summer romp into desperation and hopelessness.
Do we want to revisit it in next week's podcast?
Yeah, I think we will, because I'm curious of how it will play out. It's only 13 episodes, and I think... I'm not sure if they've been calling it a miniseries and a series. So I think they're seeing how well it does. And I kind of actually don't want it to do that well in the ratings. And I mean, you know,
what a terrible thing to say.
Yeah, I know.
Those people have jobs, you know,
and I know it, but against them. I think that this is a story that could be done very, very well in 13 weeks. I think it is also a story that could get very boring if dragged out for 3-4 seasons.
We are restricted. That dome isn't, well, I mean, in the last shot, it wasn't nearly as large as I thought it was, you know? There's only so much we can do in that dome, right? Right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll get fun, just like Jericho. They didn't often leave Jericho. A lot of it will just be like interpersonal politicking battles, I'm sure, between, you know, Evil Hank and Barbie.
And Barbie.
God, hey, that's his name.
Yeah, but I definitely feel like we should come back to a second episode because and I'm always super reserved when giving out grades for this sort of thing because pilots are icky.
But a C minus, man, that's like almost a failing grade.
F is failing.
Yeah, but D, you don't pass with a D.
Okay, I'll admit the C minus was probably a bit harsh because now I'm thinking back, like, what did I give Bates Motel or Vikings when I first saw it?
I think you gave Vikings a freaking like B plus or something.
it's that could have been due to the whole genre it was in and stuff, the setting, I guess, but I don't know, but C minus was a bit hard. I'll admit,
this
C minus
was better
maybe
than,
C plus.
This
maybe.
Was better than the pilot of Vikings, I think.
I would say it captured me more with its story. Yeah, character wise, it's about the same for me.
I think Bates Motel kind of evolved into a show that's better than both of them, but yeah,
that's a story for another day.
Yep. So yeah, that was Under the Dome. Watch it or don't, whatever. So yeah, next we're going to move on to our episode spotlight of today and our postmortem kind of on Zack Stone is going to be famous.
Zack Stone is gonna be famous. Zack Stone.
So, oh, man. We just watched episode 9, which aired on Monday, I believe, or Tuesday, one of those days. Can we just say that both CBS's and MTV's video players are the worst?
Worst. Like, an incredible amount of commercials and interruptions, and they cut them at the wrong moments, too, especially CBS. I was getting, like, not cut at commercial breaks, like, naturally throughout the video. I was getting cut at random times.
Yeah, that happened to me too. Also on CBS.
They'd be in the middle of a sentence or at the end of a sentence and they cut it. And I'm like, what the hell?
Also, when I was watching Under the Dome, this thing kept happening that's only ever happened. This has happened before on CBS's video players and nowhere else where it'll just randomly jump back a second and a half. So
yes,
someone will be like.
It did that like 5 times.
Yeah, it's obnoxious. God, it makes MTV's like, video player look like Hulu. Like, and
hey, the dome shocked me. Yeah. Hey, the dome shocked me.
It's so annoying.
Right after.
So yeah, Zack Stone's gonna be famous. Episode 9. Zack Stone is gonna be scary. So Zack Stone, for those of you who don't know, is a show created by the young comedian Bo Burnham. It just got canceled today, a couple hours before we recorded this. And it was on MTV and follows the everyday activities of Zach Stone, this kid that instead of going to college, used all of his college savings to get a documentary crew to follow him around, thinking that it will lead to quick fame.
I think it's a very interesting concept, especially in our day and age where, you know, reality TV is obviously really popular, but also just even the whole documentary format that so many shows are taking now, you know. And this kind of would be a crazy idea some high school kid would have coming out of, you know, high school.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching shows like that.
Also, I don't love the fact that it's on MTV because they promoted it horribly and now they canceled it and it didn't fit with their audience. But I think it is kind of funny that it was on MTV because MTV is like the biggest proponent of this, you know, everyone can get famous for doing nothing culture.
It's ironic.
Yeah, it is. I thought that was fun. But yeah, so I've watched every episode of the show so far. How many have you watched, Josh?
I think I only have two more to go till I'm all caught up with everything.
Nice. And so yeah, let's talk about this episode specifically. In this episode, Zach decides that he is every week. Zach Stone thinks that he's going to get famous in a different way.
Yes, he's either going to be a rock star or he's going to get famous.
Or he's
going to
make a sex tape.
There's a sex tape, which was a great, great episode.
Yeah, so in this episode, he decided that he was going to be kind of a ghost hunter, but really the ulterior motive was to find out if he could scare his brother, who is kind of this, like, alpha male type kid, whereas Zach, kind of, if you've listened to any of Bo Burnham's comedy or his stand-up, you know that, you know, his kind of feminine voice is, you know, he's not a very masculine guy, and that kind of is one of his you know, biggest, like, ongoing bits about himself. Yeah. And this episode played into that of, you know, his brother is more of a traditional guy's guy than he ever will be. So he's trying to scare his brother. And, you know, I really liked, it started out as very generic, the relationship between him and the girl next door, Amy. But I kind of like how it's evolved. I was pretty invested in this episode into the love story between Zach and Amy.
You know, it also helped that they were so self-aware about it from the beginning. One of the first lines he said when she actually showed up on the show was, you know, she doesn't really fit the whole girl next door, you know,
yeah,
thing.
Right.
Where she does exactly, like,
yeah.
Perfectly fits the girl next door template.
Yeah. You know, this episode, of course, ends with a big reveal that, oh my gosh, they kissed, and, you know, and that was fun. That was fun.
Which was pretty soon. I didn't know they were going to get there so fast. You know, I'm thinking an Office type dragging on for a couple seasons, but
yeah, well, this is cable, so they usually, you know, don't drag it out that long. Plus, good thing they didn't, because now they're done.
Yeah.
Anyone who's curious to check the show out can check it out on MTV's website, or this Saturday, they are showing the last three episodes. They're burning them all off on Saturday night in the middle of the night.
Oh, man. They're just throwing it out like a used, you know, piece of crap.
Yep.
They don't want anymore. That's sad. That's sad because I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this show, and it's some of the best comedy that I've seen in a show in, like, you know, quite a while. I compared it to, you know, the first seasons of The Office in, you know,
The American Office, right?
The American Office in the form of his awkwardness. Those awkward moments that Zach creates for himself because he is so unaware of how he's perceived. He has no idea, like, how to gauge people or anything like that. So he really is like a Michael Scott type character, and those squirm in my seat moments came back for the first time in years and years watching this.
Yeah, you know, I do think it I know Bo Burnham has spoke extensively about his love of the British Office and how much he loves the awkward cringe humor in that. I've never heard him give his opinion on the American Office, but it's interesting to me because this show kind of bears more resemblance to that show than the British Office, because what the show does well, and it's a hard line to figure out, and it's something that Parks and Recreation didn't do well in its first season, of knowing how the audience, keeping an audience to liking a character. I would say I like Zack Stone. I don't know if I would want to hang out with him like Michael Scott, but you know, they give him enough humanity and enough moments of self-awareness, small ones, but they're definitely there.
Small moments of self-awareness and maybe even a little hint of doubt. Like, you see it for just a second, and you grab onto this humanity, and then it's gone, like, almost instantly after,
because right. he and says something else. Right, and then he's putting else. On a show again.
Yeah.
And that's a hard line to walk, and it bears more resemblance to Michael Scott than David Brent, whereas David Brent's most human, you pitied him. You never really liked David Brent. He was a pretty horrible human being. Michael Scott was not a horrible human being, although he could be. And Zack Stone is kind of more in that mold of he's a guy that could be a really nice guy if he could just get out of his own way.
That's a perfect way to put it.
And yeah, I liked that dynamic. This show, you know, I'm not sure. You seem to really like it, and that's awesome. I like it a lot too. It doesn't really like shatter any new comedy grounds. It's not Community or Arrested Development where it's like, wow, I didn't like this is comedy done in a different way than I've seen it before. It doesn't do that. At this point, the mockumentary is very well-trodden territory. But still, this trods it very well. I like the relationship between, like I said, between Amy and Zach, but also between Zach and Nick, Amy's boyfriend. I thought they've developed that really well. It started out as a very Toby and Michael relationship of Zach just hates this guy who just seems like the nicest guy in the world. You know, Nick always seemed like a very nice guy. And they haven't really changed anything about Nick, except make him... We want to get in on Zach's ridiculousness. Like in this episode, when Nick showed up and was like, is this really what you want to be doing on your, you know, Friday night? We were on Zach's side. I hated Nick in that moment.
Come on, dude.
Which was weird because, you know, that's the show is doing a good job with that, because in real life, Nick's position would be very understandable. yet in the context of the show, you agree with Zach that this guy is a total dick.
You want the crazy, quirky, you know, situations, and he was like a wet blanket, and you were like, no, let us have our fun.
Yeah.
It's going to make for a good episode, you know.
Right. And what I also really like about Zach Stone is it can be very broad, it can be very big, because Zach Stone is such a wacky character. But underneath all of that, there is a really human, small-scale story about this kid that is afraid to move on with his life in any way while he's seeing all of his friends get ready to leave for college, get ready to, you know, they're making their big plans, and he's kind of just stuck in this town, kind of paralyzed in fear of moving on. The episode where he went to a college and realized that he really didn't want to be there. So he doesn't want to move on, but he also doesn't want his friends to move on, and they are. You know, it's not, you know, being trapped under a dome, but it's a very nice, small-scale, relatable human story that I think the show has subtly pulled off pretty well.
It is very, very human, and it's something that everyone could relate to. I think everyone's had the moment that Zach is having in this show, and you know, even his friends around him. I mean, that you know, you're getting something out of them too. His buddy and this you know, Halloween episode or this, I don't even want to call it a Halloween episode because it's not really, it's, they even acknowledged it was August yeah. when they were doing this. But, you know, he even said, like, I'm really scared. Like, I'm scared to move on too. Like, I don't know. It was very relatable for me. And maybe because that time of, you know, leaving high school, going into college was maybe more recent for, you know, me and our generation than, you know, other people watching the show. I know, I felt like the comedy and the story was more geared to probably my age demographic also, and that's might have fed into why I enjoyed it so thoroughly.
Yeah, you know, if this show was just Bo Burnham being Zack Stone at his most loud, I don't know if it definitely wouldn't be as good, and I don't know if I could even watch it for that long. But having Zack Stone be someone who is just kind of this this kind of damaged kid that's just looking for attention, and at heart is just, you know, pretty much just scared of everything.
Sure.
And wants to use the cameras as, you know, we see over and over him trying to direct the camera to see what he wants his life to be like in the early episodes of him dating the really, really attractive girl from high school. But she was only interested in him because she thought she could be famous by being on his cameras. Like, he's trying to change reality, trying to put, you know, a different reality forward than what's actually going on in his life. And it's kind of aspirational. Like, he's trying to show what he wants his life to be, and the cameras are, of course, picking up what his life actually is.
Yes.
And, you know, that's a lot of fun layers for a goofy MTV show.
It is. And it strikes that chord so perfectly and walks the line so well that it's kind of like a breath of fresh air at moments, because it can change its pace in just a second. You know, you could get a different emotion where you could go from pure silliness to like, oh, that was actually pretty, that was a deep moment there. That was something.
You know, I'm not saying that this show is, you know, a revolution of comedy or anything, but it is incredibly solid. It is a vastly underrated show. I actually saw one of my favorite TV critics today. He tweeted out, you know, I think I've heard of most shows on TV, but this Zack Stone thing that some people are sad just got canceled, never heard of it. Like,
that's a shame.
Under the radar. And if it was on Comedy Central or something like that, I mean, Comedy Central cancels shows too, but at least it would have had a chance at attention. MTV is not a network that anyone looks for quality programming on anymore. It hasn't been for a very long time. And, you know, the fact that this small, fun little show aired for, you know, a couple weeks on there and is now going to be quickly forgotten by most people, it's sad, you know? It never really got a chance to shine.
Yeah, and, you know, you're notorious for introducing me to shows that instantly seem to instantaneously get canceled the moment I get into them.
Yeah,
but I'm glad at least I've discovered, because, I mean, this is a young kid. He's, what, you said he was the youngest showrunner now
in American television. Yeah, I believe he has someone showrunning with him, but before this, the youngest showrunner was the OC's Josh Schwartz, who was 25, and Bo Burnham is 22 or 23. So I think he technically breaks the record.
Okay. Because, I mean, he's definitely got talents. And I look forward to following him now that I know he's out there. Because I wasn't aware of his presence. I didn't follow him before this.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. And you know what? I hope that this experience of, you know, having your show quickly canceled, because, you know, it's not like he's a guy who's trying to make his name as a TV writer. He's a comedian first and foremost, but I hope that this experience doesn't scare him away from ever jumping back in the TV pool, because I'd like to see him have another show.
Oh, definitely.
Maybe on a network that's a little more, you know, fit to what the kind of stuff that he wants to produce. Not, it just doesn't fit in with their lineup at all.
Like I said, if it doesn't have the name Cribs in it, it doesn't fit on MTV.
It Yeah, it's a documentary of people knowing they're acting like idiots instead of people acting like idiots and not knowing it.
Yes.
But yeah, it's too bad. So this episode, this season, there's three more episodes, and then it's going to be over. And that's really too bad, because I think going forward, a season two would have been great. Comedies are usually stronger in their second season. And also, I really would have liked to see what happened. I'm assuming that the cast would still be there, and that season two would have picked up with them either, like, home from college. Maybe the whole season would have taken place over a break. And to see how his friends going to college would have affected Zach's life, that would have been interesting. And it's really too bad that we'll never get to see that. But the good news is that this Saturday you can find three whole new episodes, and I'll probably watch those, and that'll be a lot of fun.
Yes, still have that to look forward to at least.
So what do you think, what grade are you going to give to Zack Stone's Gonna Be Famous? And I guess if you're going to watch again, does not really matter at this point.
Yes, I would watch it again in a heartbeat. I'm going to give Zack Stone an A minus.
A minus.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good grade. I'm going to give it a B plus. I liked it a ton. I didn't think its early episodes, I think its second and third, didn't quite work as well as the rest of the season for me, but no, it's a really good show, and I definitely recommend that anyone check it out. So yeah, that Zack Stone is going to be famous, and it will be dearly missed. I enjoyed checking it out every Tuesday night. That was a lot
of fun. Like a quick fling with a romantic lover that is now, you know, gone forever. Oh, so sad.
It is. So yeah, I think that's about it for us this week. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at BrainMushCast. You should rate and review us on iTunes. That'll really help our standings in the iTunes. We've got some ratings, which thanks for those guys. But really? More is always appreciated. Yeah, really, it's incredible.
One star, two star.
No, five stars.
Five stars!
They like us. They really like us. Except, I mean, you know, some of us probably don't like us, and that's cool. But, you know, you guys can just be the ones to not rate and review us on iTunes.
I like it. We have, what, two ratings? Your mom and my mom?
Nah, my mom has never listened to this show.
Yeah, my mom is not a podcast listener either.
So, yeah, rate and review us on iTunes. That'd be great. There's other probably... Oh, yeah. Download the Stitcher app, and you can stream us for free. And other stuff. So, yeah. Have a good one, everybody. And these things, they snap right off.